Welcome back to Bullseye on the Afternoon on AM 930 WEOL and 100.3 FM. It's time now to talk some Browns with Fox 8's very own John Telich on our Budweiser From the Sidelines segment presented by North Ridgeville Convenience Sunoco on Center Ridge and Barton Roads. JT, a pleasure to have you on as always, my friend. How are you?
I'm great. Happy holidays to you, Bull, and to all your great listeners.
Much appreciated, my friend. And well, I guess when you take a look at the list of Pro Bowlers, even though it's been a difficult season for the Browns, there's still something to be thankful for this holiday season with this team. While they've certainly failed to meet some expectations, it was still nice to see the list of Pro Bowlers for the Cleveland Browns.
Yeah, it's been really an impressive year, first and foremost, for Nick Chubb, and very happy that he was voted in. He's a starter. He will be lined up there in Orlando when they play the game, and he certainly absolutely deserves it. At 1,400 plus yards, he's having basically the best season of any running back since 65, and we all know who churned out those great seasons from 1957 to 65, the GOAT himself, Jim Brown. And so kudos to him. This guy never says anything. He's very unselfish. In his statement last night through the team to the media, said thank you very much to his teammates, to his to the fans who gave him so much support. But then he basically said, I would trade this or any kind of an individual award for having more wins and having a successful season as a team constituted, you know, in the NFL. And so that says all you need to know about what kind of a guy Nick Chubb is. And then, you know, Jarvis Landry, there's been the controversy, and he's just, first and foremost, an incredibly fiery individual, cares very much for his craft. So he's going to the Pro Bowl. That's a slam dunk. That's five seasons now that he's had 1,000 yards. He's put up tremendous numbers. He's having another very good season, and he deserves to be there. And then as far as, you know, the other guys, when you get into the alternate realm, Bull, you know, you don't know if the guy's going to get called on, if someone else gets hurt or what have you. But Joel Bitonio now going as an alternate. That's the second time, I believe, he's been an alternate. So maybe if someone is hurt, he gets to go. And then you have three others in Schobert, who has been to the Pro Bowl, Denzel, who was there last year as a rookie. I think Schobert's a second alternate. Denzel's a fourth. And then OBJ, he got some kind of mention. He's a fifth alternate. Very unlikely that he goes to the Pro Bowl. And certainly with his hip and groin and hernia and all those issues that he's been dealing with this year, highly unlikely that he would play even if he were, you know, given the green light to go. So, you know, not the Ravens. The Ravens, I believe, had 12 guys that were tabbed Pro Bowlers. So they are, you know, having a bushel full of players going to the Pro Bowl, and that's commensurate with having a 12-2 record. And, obviously the Browns, when you're talking about, like what Chubb said, wanting the individual awards, those are nice and all that, but the team award, that's what they want. And I'm sure there's a lot of guys on the Browns, you know, one day would like to be Pro Bowlers. Kareem Hunt, had he played a full season, maybe you could make the case there. Just a tremendous player. But for now, it's just two guys going, with maybe perhaps one or two following if people get hurt.
Speaking of Kareem Hunt, boy, he's one of a few here over the last couple of weeks to call this team out for lack of effort. You never want to hear that this deep into the season. But, you know, it certainly seems like where there's smoke, there's certainly some fire. And, you know, Kareem Hunt was the most recent to come out and question the effort of this team. And that's awfully concerning on a team this talented.
Yeah, I think what Kareem said is probably the most damning thing that we have seen about this football team this year, because he was not with the club for a good chunk of the season because of the suspension. He was only allowed to come back and be with the team like a couple of weeks before he came back and played in the ninth game of the season. He's now played five of them. And so he has seen, and I can't say, you know, that his feelings towards the effort or lack thereof were just from this Sunday. You would think that this type of a feeling would be kind of boiling over for him, noticing on certain plays that certain guys weren't giving their best. And you obviously need players like Kareem Hunt who have that will and that fortitude to play, you know, 110% each and every play. And so I thought that was more than other things about, you know, come get me and all these other controversies that's gone on this year, to have someone like Kareem Hunt make that statement and be unafraid to do so, I think that says a lot. So that's a problem. That's a very big problem.
No question about that. And, well, I think there are some other things, too, that kind of fall on the head coach. And if we're to focus on some positives as far as the head coach goes, I mean, Freddie Kitchens takes a look at some of the positives. They did beat all three AFC North teams, right? I guess there's something to be said for that. You know, Chubb, you know, and Landry, they certainly stood out so far this season, too. And I think when you look at this thing on the whole here, JT, it's awfully difficult to focus on the positives when so many things have gone wrong.
Yeah, because there was so much promise, Bull. I think we can all sit here and say that we expected the Browns to be much better than a 6-8 record at this time. And we would also think, even if the record were a couple of games better than 6-8. Let's just say, you know, they were right at, you know, 7-7. Let's say that right there, they're just playing 500 ball. 7-7 sounds better. But if 7-7 came with guys giving all-out effort each play, with the coach dialing up good plays or not making boneheaded decisions throughout the course of the season where the team's been put in a good position to win, then you might feel better about a record like that where you're not seeing these recurring situations, whether it's a coach wearing a T-shirt about Pittsburgh or all the other controversies that's gone on this year, whether it's the visors or the clown shoes or all of these things that have gone into the drama that is Cleveland Browns football teams each and every year. Had the record been somewhat similar, but you had them, you know, giving their all and play calls just not you know, being what they would like, then you might be able to give them somewhat of a pass. But there was just too much promise. And for Freddie to, you know, point out in his news conference on Monday some of the things that they have done in a positive manner, like third down defense, you know, getting off the field to get the ball back to the offense. They've done better in that area. And there's some other, you know, spots about how the team has played this year that have shown some kind of improvement. But, you know, this is a results-based business, and, you know, you cannot sugarcoat what a record is right now that they have. They have 6 wins out of 14 games, and it's simply not enough.
It is nowhere near enough. There's no question about that with the expectations coming into the season. And to stay with the effort for another moment, too, because, again, that's the kind of thing I think that's really hard for us as fans to overlook. But a guy that, you know, I think every Cleveland Browns fan has kind of fallen in love with over the years for all the obvious reasons, if you've ever met or spoken to the man, Ernest Biner, is just a top-notch individual. And he mentioned that the effort isn't necessarily something that we should put on the head coach.
Yeah, I think all these guys should have the professional pride and the character to go out and give everything that they have each and every day. And so, you know, Freddie can game plan and Freddie can practice and have crisp workouts and what have you. But on Sundays, the effort falls 100% on these guys. And if these guys are not giving their all, I don't think that's a category where you can categorically say Freddie Kitchens is the worst coach on earth, because it's on these guys. These are professionals. So when Biner says something like that, don't put it on the head coach. It's all about that personal look in the mirror kind of pride that you're supposed to have as a professional. That also speaks volumes. It's kind of interesting that these comments about the effort or lack thereof of the Cleveland Browns are coming from two players that are, if you'll excuse my expression, just 100% you know what to the wall. Just go 1,000% as best that they can. That's how Ernest Biner played his entire career, and that's how Kareem Hunt played. So these guys know, and they know it's on the players to give everything that they have. You can't sit here and conveniently you know, put Freddie's picture on a dartboard and start throwing darts at him because the guys don't have this great effort. Sure, he's got to put them in positions to be successful. I totally get that. But it's professional pride, and these guys have to know that. And that's why I think Ernest Biner was right on the money when he says, don't put all of this stuff, this lack of effort and that kind of stuff, on the head coach. It's the personal pride of the football player himself.
Again, we're speaking with Fox 8's very own John Telich on our Budweiser From the Sideline segment presented by North Ridgeville Convenience Sunoco on Center Ridge and Barton Roads. Well, JT, I think we all knew the Browns were going to miss the services of their first-round pick from a couple years back. They are really having a difficult time on defense without Myles Garrett. And I think we knew that it would be kind of a struggle. And I think that combined with all the other injuries to this defense, what you saw on Sunday, that was the result of a lot of that. But you know, I think we're getting a really good look as to just how incredibly valuable Myles Garrett is.
Boy, the ripple effect when you consider there were, you know, crucial plays on Sunday where the defensive line had two guys that had only been in the building for less than 2 weeks, and then Sheldon Richardson did not have Olivier Vernon because he's been hurt and he's basically been a wash this season. But it just goes to show you so many ways that Myles Garrett affected the defense, and so many ways there probably would be a few more interceptions, a few more turnovers if he were out there affecting a quarterback like a Kyler Murray or whomever. And so, you know, whenever it's time for him to go get extra money on his next contract, he can point to the fact that when he was out, this team just did not have what it, you know, takes, and certainly missed his leadership and or the great disruptive nature of his defensive line players. They need that desperately, and not having Miles has had that ripple effect.
No question about that, and I think, you know, we're all waiting on pins and needles to see what the NFL is going to do, and hopefully the Browns can get him back at the beginning of next year, because they certainly have not defined just how long this suspension is going to be just yet. JT, taking a look at this coming week against the Baltimore Ravens. Boy, on paper, it doesn't look like there's any way in the world the Browns are going to win this thing, but stranger things have indeed happened. And as a matter of fact, while the Ravens haven't lost in a very long time, the Browns were indeed the last team to beat the Ravens. So looking ahead at this matchup, what kinds of things are going to have to go right for the Browns to come out on top?
Well, when I was looking at some of the film, some of the plays from that first encounter, I saw a heck of a lot of Nick Chubb. And Nick Chubb making game-defining plays, breaking tackles, changing direction, scoring touchdowns, affecting the game that way. They did a good job on keeping Lamar Jackson from being totally a pinball kind of a quarterback, or a kind of a guy that you just simply cannot account for and even stop on the field and on the most elementary of plays. They did a fairly decent job with him. So if you were to say the Browns would be a team that could be the one that beat them to start their 10-game winning streak and then be the team to beat them to end it, I mean, that would be absolutely monumental. It would totally erase what we saw, the bad taste in the mouth of what happened in Arizona a week ago. But you also have to be realistic. The Browns are about 10-point underdogs on their own field. A few days before Christmas, there has been locker room talk that guys have given up, you know, on certain plays. We've heard that. There's been the whole whispering of, you know, telling other guys and other teams to, you know, get me out of here, that type of a thing. There's all these things that are going around, tons of distractions. This is certainly the proverbial gut check kind of a game for not just Freddie, but for most of these football players. Can they summon up that one game to play the Ravens tough and even be successful? I mean, they did it before. It was a different team. We had Garrett, obviously. You had other people out there that are no longer on the team with. But you do have, you know, a player like Kareem Hunt in the mix now. And so I'm not saying they have no chance at all, but I see, if you're asking for a prediction, I see Baltimore winning this game. But they did do a pretty decent job with him, and it was because they had the running back, the best one in the league, and they rode a lot of what he was able to do with his legs. And so that certainly would be one of my, you know, solutions to the problem of beating the Ravens, is you come out and you run Nick Chubb and you use that two-back system as much as you can. You let Kareem be the quasi-fullback, if you will, and the lead blocker for him. And then I just think you can be more successful, more dynamic offensively if you go in that direction. So it's a tall order, Bull, but we'll see what happens. That's why they play the games.
That's exactly it. You're right. I mean, I think we point to all these things, and because things are going so well for Baltimore and they're going so poorly for the Browns, the general consensus is, until we see something differently, how are we to believe the Browns are going to pull off the upset? But as you stated, that's why they play these games. Well, this offseason, it seemed like the Browns made a lot of really, really good moves, and then there were some areas where it felt like they really didn't pay enough attention to. And that offensive line, I think, is going to be constantly under the microscope, at least for the next couple of games, and probably the area that the Browns look at most to try and improve in the offseason. You know, John Dorsey doesn't really seem to have many faults, at least in the first couple of years of his tenure here with the Browns. Would you say that was his biggest fault in the offseason, not really doing much to address the needs of the offensive line?
Yeah, I think, and swinging and missing on Austin Corbett, who he figured would be part of that mix, at least in the interior of the line. You wouldn't have Cush playing for some games and not playing well, having to bring in this Teller, Wyatt Teller, have him in the mix. Not solving that tackle problem is obviously the biggest thing that he missed on, he swung and missed on. And so you have the most valuable player of this franchise, its quarterback, entering his second year, and I just think that's when you pull out all the stops to make the offensive line as good as it can get. And I understood the lure of what Olivier Vernon could do for the other side of the football. I totally get that. So he made the deal, and he has to live with it. But if he does not concentrate a ton of his efforts, along with his lieutenants and what have you, on solving this offensive line situation, then, you know, what are they actually there for in the first place? Because, you know, Baker has not progressed this year. In some ways, he's regressed. He's a very up and down kind of a season, and I think some of those problems could have been mitigated if they really paid attention to the one area that, if you look at each and every pro football team, the ones that are successful usually have the very reliable people up front, and they don't have to all be first round picks. They have to be five guys that play together, and right now, for the most part this season, that has not been the case.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see what this team does in the offseason, because we're a couple of weeks away from potentially addressing a head coaching situation. That remains to be seen, and we'll be talking a lot about what the Browns are going to do in the draft as well, and it seems like that's a conversation that we have every single year too. So it's a never-ending cycle, JT, isn't it?
It's either a mock draft or it's who's the candidate to be the next head coach of the Cleveland Browns. It's always one subject or the other.
Yep, you got it. It's kind of like that wash, rinse, repeat cycle. Seems like it is constant with the Browns. But hopefully they can get things turned around. JT, as always, my friend, we appreciate the time. Thank you so much for joining us. Happy holidays to you and yours, and we will sit down and chat again next week.
All right, I look forward to it. Happy holidays to you and all your listeners, my friend. Talk to you then.
Thank you, JT. Much appreciated. That's John Telich with Fox 8 joining us on the Budweiser From the Sidelines segment presented by North Ridgeville, convenient Sunoco on Center Ridge and Barton Roads. We need to take a break here on Bullseye on the Afternoon. Matt Douglas and I will come back with more after this here on AM 930 WEOL and 100.3 FM.